You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, the person I'm about to introduce, I met for the first time. She is a woman. She might clear that up, but I think I met her for the first time at a function a couple of weeks ago, and I was chatting to her, and I found her to be most interesting for a whole lot of reasons, and then a friend of mine called Grant Nickel. He said, oh, you don't know anything about this person. She is a star. She's an entrepreneur. And I said, well, I don't, but that's good enough for me. A person of interest. So we thought we might get her in to have a chat to about who she is and what she does. And it's a great pleasure to introduce Georgina Damm to everyone, D-A-M-M.
That's it.
Sue Stanley is here, and myself, and Georgina, I know this is a pathetic thing to say, but no relation of Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I wish.
Yeah, you wish, yeah. So thank you for coming in. Now, we had a chat about a whole lot of things, but first of all, you are not the entrepreneur, you are the prime...
Owner, is that the word you're looking for?
Owner of Damn Fine Foods.
Correct.
Damn Fine Foods. I was trying to think of you are the head of Damn Fine Foods because it's your company.
It is, hence the dam.
And I think I'd be fair to say, Georgina, that you were one of the very few people to prevail during the COVID, the disgraceful, these are not your words, these are mine, the disgraceful COVID lockdown that this government, this present government put, not this present government, the Andrews government, put on state of Victoria during the COVID saga. But you happened to survive that and went from strength to strength. I want to know how you got into Damn Fine Foods and how you did that.
Well, that's lots of questions there, Sam. First of all, thanks for having me, and Sue, great to meet you.
Thank you. You too.
That's a really good question. Ultimately, I'm in the party business. You know, food is at the core of the business, but ultimately, I'm all about parties.
Catering for parties,
but also I just love parties. So
party animal.
I like being a guest. I like creating them. I like, you know, doing them on behalf of other people. And you know, the more you go to, the better you get.
And the private or in the corporate?
Both, yeah, but probably 50-50. And the wedding market's huge for my businesses. I've got a few venues around Melbourne, the old George Ballroom in St Kilda. Do you know that one?
Yep,
the back of the George?
Absolutely.
Yep, that one. It used to be a band venue, like, you know, Blondie and Nick Cave and...
Yep.
I think a few, you know, crazy punk bands. You've probably
been there. Jose Feliciano down there back in the 60s or 70s.
Okay.
I've seen plenty of people down there from different eras.
Yeah, there you go. So that ballroom's now a venue that we run, and I've got another one on the top of the GPO in the city, which is very mostly corporate, but and a big one at South Bank called Metropolis. You might have been to a few events.
Yep.
There. Yep. So I'm in that kind of business, but mostly I'm in the party business.
I know you're in the party business, and I'm not sure how many stories
you can... Don't tell all those stories, Sam.
I'm not sure how many stories you could tell us about the party business. This is why I asked you to come in, but we'll just dip a toe in the water a little shortly about that. But you became famous or infamous, if you like, because in conjunction with another person, you put bows and neon signs... Or not neon. What did you do in the parklands?
At Burning Man? Is that? Oh no! You're talking about over COVID.
Yes, over COVID.
The masks.
You put the masks
on the trees.
On the trees.
Yeah.
With
quarantine trees, we call them.
With an associate of yours, a friend
yes,
of yours,
Carla O'Brien. She's an artist, a neon artist. That's yeah. You've done your research. Oh, did I tell you that? Maybe I had a few martinis by then.
No, you didn't tell me that, but I
did do that.
So you were so taken aback by the I presume, the nonsense that the government went on with, which is absolutely proven to be a complete nutter hoax.
Isn't it?
Why did you...
I think there was alcohol involved. But what it was basically we all of a sudden had all this time on our hands and I'm just not used to being idle. And it just really pissed me off that, you know, we were being locked up. And I kind of was more about making a statement that I'm not sure if you saw these quarantines. We did them all over Melbourne. Basically what it was we made masks out of fabric and eyeballs and eyebrows and we would screen print them with like a love heart and Melb, M-E-L-B, on them, kind of over the mouth. And we would actually set trees up like they were faces and put the masks on and give them all different eyebrows and Google eyes or kind of glamorous eyes or... and basically staple gun them to the trees and wrap them up. Do it like in the middle of the night, sneak
out. That is an extraordinary thing to do. That wouldn't have been a cheap thing to do, would it?
I went to Spotlight back and forth a few times. And because I had my own business, I could write my own work permits to be able to say I was allowed to be driving around.
But did you get into trouble for that?
We got caught once by the police and we just said that, you know, we were being paid by the council and they just believed it.
They believed it.
So we had them all around the town and people started taking photos. Yeah. We did them around Albert Park Lake, places where people were walking. It was just
happy.
To put a smile on people's face. Yeah.
So,
you know? So
while people whinged about it and said, you're
killing the trees.
It's not whinged about doing that. Whinged about COVID and being locked up. You actually put your money where your mouth was. And on behalf of the general populace, you went out there and said, this is bullshit.
Yep.
And, good on you. Yeah. So...
it was a very silent protest, and it was something fun, and it felt a bit guerrilla art-ish. My best ones were the ones outside the art gallery, and I was like, "Oh, we're going to be on camera here for sure." Kind of pulled up my hoodie, but you know, it's funny. I look back in social media and Instagram and things, and there's still so many people that have got memories of that around that era. We did a lot of it. It was probably we did it for about 2 months.
Oh, really?
And they'd get pulled down, and we'd just put them back up.
Who would pull them down? The council?
Council, probably. Or just people that didn't like, you know, thought it was graffiti maybe. I don't know. It was a bit of fun.
Don't worry, we're getting on to the... how did you start in the food business?
Probably like everyone else, part-time job, you know, when I was at school and I got my first job in a cafe as a kitchen hand, washing dishes and learned a bit about food and... I travelled a lot when I was young and because my family moved around. We lived in Asia and got to see a lot of different food. I think that's probably where I had a real appreciation of where food came from and understanding the kind of concept of entertaining in food. Like it was a real kind of ritual of, especially in Asia and Hong Kong where we lived for a long time.
Did you?
Yep. And then when I went to uni, I moved to a farm. That was a bit of a culture shock, a 25,000-acre sheep farm about 40 minutes out of Canberra. And so... two guys I'd gone to school with, it was their parents' farm.
Yep.
Actually, we went to the same school, you and I, Sam. That's how I met them.
Yes.
Because we were boarders. And I moved on there. I was like, you know, don't know what else I want to do really. So I went to Canberra Uni and lived on this farm. And when I was there... I learned all about really where food came from, like how to cut up a sheep, how to actually pull apart, you know, a whole lamb and how to grow vegetables. Yeah. I didn't know beetroot actually didn't come out of a can. I'm not joking. And I was 18. I did not realise it came out of the ground.
It's the same kids as today. They just don't know where food comes from,
exactly.
Do they?
Yeah. So, and it was a real, and this, the fat, that family had this incredible veggie garden and it was all about seasons too. I learned about, you know, like when there's abundance of something, you pick it and you pickle it, and you make jam and you freeze it. And, you know, that really gave me an insight into, I think, and a lot more understanding about nutrient and food and where, what, you know, where food comes from and seasonality, but also about entertaining.
Mm. Yeah, I guess if they get that. So people said, well, you've been on a farm and you've done all this, and how did you? And so you said, well, I'll put on a function for you, or is that how?
Well, actually, no. From that, it went to I got a part-time job working for Peter Rowland.
Oh, I see.
Who was
the guru?
And still is around and is a guru. Actually, an amazing man, and he really was, you know, Mr.
He's
Mr.
actually
Cato.
Not around, is he? He's
I don't know.
No, he's living.
Yes.
But
good, Sam. I didn't want you to.
No, I don't think Rollins is.
No, Rollins is still around, but he's not running it. He actually sold the business. I think he's slightly involved in a very casual way. Yep. But, you know, they really, in the 80s, they were it. They were the Melbourne Cup. They were if you had a party, if you wanted a chicken sandwich, you know. And so I learned about catering from Peter Rolland.
I've got a feeling the parties they put on, Georgina, you not only combine, I think I'm right in saying this, you'll correct me if I'm not, you not only combine damn good foods, mm-hmm. Good tasty foods that are succulent and wholesome and very palatable, mm-hmm. but you put on different things at parties. You provide the people who want parties, you yep. provide them with the wherewithal to have a really enjoyable time,
well, whether it be
people
true.
Or analgesics, not analgesics necessarily, but people who want to explore a diversity of what's available in the party scene. How am I going?
Yeah, you're not really that
not
great.
Not really that well, no.
But basically, Sam's saying, you know, if somebody wants a service, I'm out there to find it. Like, I've found some crazy, you know, like it can start with something as simple as strippers, not hard to find, but it could be, you know, dwarves. It could be I need ponies or zebras. I need, you know, I need somebody that, I don't know, blows smoke out of their ass. I don't know, like anything. And people have strange requests and I love my job because I get to start researching and finding out where to find this shit.
So you are an enabler.
I'm an enabler. I'm a paid enabler.
Yes, a paid enabler. Yeah. And
obviously everything's legal, Sam. I'd just like to preface by saying I don't source illegal activities. But
no, that's right. No, I shouldn't have said analgesics because that people...
He just said that on his mind.
That's fine. I'm sure I know someone that would know someone. That,
but you wouldn't source illegal substances for any... I understand that.
But quirks. I'm definitely... You know, when people are doing really private events and I work for lots of people. They're not all wealthy, but a lot of them are. And the more wealth, the more kind of obscure sometimes the
like
request.
What are the more unusual things you've been asked to provide at for an event or a function for someone?
Naked trapeze artist comes to mind. A male. Which was an interesting appendage swinging through the top of a marquee. There was two, actually. They worked in tandem. And they were not known to be that kind of performance, but I had to find them first and then ask how they felt about being naked. People just like pushing people's boundaries, you know.
In one of the more salubrious suburbs of Melbourne, I know because I spoke to you about this, but you won't mention it if you don't want to.
Oh, I'm happy
but
to.
But you were asked to put on a pretty extravagant event at one of the more salubrious, which had me fascinated. What was all that about?
And was it went the Halloween one?
No? Yes, the Halloween one.
Halloween one was quite amazing, actually. That was, we won't say who it is, obviously, because everybody's private. But, you know, when you get people that have great imagination and wealth, then out of that comes fantastic creativity. So we created a broken down, a bit like a Saltburn. Have you seen the movie Saltburn?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Sam, you got to see it. There's a couple of great scenes in it, but there's a really good party scene. And it's about just throwing everything at it. And it's, you know, basically bringing in incredible performers because you've got the budget. Like actually for that one, we tried to secure Dua Lipa, who actually was secured and then was unwell. But, you know, those kind of things, when people are performing in Australia, they'll often do private shows that you'll never know about. Actually, there was one at the... I think Katy Perry was flown out recently for one. That kind of thing goes on quite a bit.
Oh, really?
And you normally don't hear about it, actually. Yeah. That was leaked probably deliberately. But
that wasn't the pre... That was it?
It was, I believe. I didn't do that event, but yeah.
At Raheem.
Yeah, at Raheem. Yeah, they do a lot of events there.
Not Richard. Anthony Pratt.
Anthony, yeah, I believe.
Flew her out. Yeah. No, I understand
Did you
that.
Go? Was it fun?
I didn't go, no.
I thought that might be your kind of crowd, Sam.
The wrong echelon for me.
I've built dungeons for people with girls in harnesses and whips. I've done...
That's a bit like your swingers thing that you
yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're part of a swingers club, Sam?
I'm not part of a swingers club, but there was a...
You wouldn't dip your toe in?
No, there's a... not my toe, no. We
between friends,
first best
friend.
Between friends, that's a... that is a...
Swingers. So you've heard?
Yeah.
No, he interviewed
the bloke.
Research.
Oh, did you go? Did you go?
No, we went to have a look.
And,
yes.
And what do you think?
Well, I didn't get my gear off, and I said to Sue, if everyone starts to get their gear off in the theatre in the bar here, are we in it? And she said, well, I've put my clean underwear on. I said, you won't be wearing your underwear. So anyhow, no, we left before.
But we did get a tour upstairs.
Got the tour of all
was it just a bunch of bedrooms?
No, stocks and whips and dungeons, all that sort of stuff.
And themed rooms as well. They love a themed room, don't they?
And
tell me, sorry I'm interviewing you, but I'm interested. Yeah. So you chatted to some of the members when you were there?
Yeah, we did.
And people from all walks of life, I imagine.
Absolutely. And you would not have picked it, absolutely not.
And they used to say, I said, why are you here? He said, well, we've been married. His wife was there. He said, we've been married for... 30 years, and it's got a bit, we thought we might like a bit of excitement, so she goes off with blokes and I go off with women and we...
meet back in the middle.
We meet back and we all put our clothes on and go home. He said it's been a tremendous saviour to our marriage.
Oh, well, there you go. Makes sense.
He said, you go and watch your wife having sex with other people? He said, well, not often.
South Yarra, is it? Was it in Paran?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
It's called...
Between Friends, isn't it?
Between Friends.
I'll have to see if they need some catering.
Yeah, no,
some
we didn't
little boys, eat. You know, little hot dogs or something?
Yeah, that's... So
pigs in a blanket?
So you, I would say your black book of where to source...
Anything. I've got a great black book if you need anything, Sam.
Now, do you dabble in overseas clientele?
Yeah, I do. I do quite a bit of work overseas, and I've got a lot of clients. You know, there's a lot of wealth in Melbourne. I mean, I work for mostly Melbourne companies and families. Australia as well. I do work in Sydney, but mostly Victoria. A lot of country kind of events like weddings and things. But with that comes those people often get married overseas, or they want to celebrate a 50th or a 40th overseas. And so even though you'd want to engage someone in the city that you're going to, often they speak a different language. And sometimes you just don't have the time to interpret. So I'll be brought in as well. And I might be, I've done weddings in Venice, in Capri, I've done events in Greece, in London. You know, I'm lucky and I get to go to these cities.
I'm sure, Georgina, you wouldn't be just asked to come in and give your advice on what food you should have.
No, it's
the whole package. They would say, Georgina, we are wanting to put on an exciting show for the people who turn up to this. Could you provide a blueprint of what you think would be exciting? And you go, whack, here
Nailed
we
it.
Are, this is what you should do.
Because
and
it
they
starts,
lap it up.
It starts from the minute really you leave Australia. You really, if you're inviting people to another country to celebrate something, it's not that you're responsible for paying for them to get there, but it's about having a website where they can, access information and making sure you've got great entertainment that's not flying a DJ from Melbourne out, but finding someone.
And it wouldn't be just the wedding itself, it would be like
no,
the pre-wedding.
It's 3-4 days.
Yeah, okay.
And it's also all the information that, when you're travelling, people like, everyone wants to know the best. Where's the best place to get my hair done? Where's the best restaurant? Where do I find the best cannoli or
so you source
best
all
cobbler,
that?
You
source all that for
for
a fee, of course.
For a very fair fee, I think.
And reasonable.
But it makes me happy, making people's. And actually, do you know what today's? It's, well, the day we're recording, it's World Happiness Day.
It
popped up on my phone.
World Happiness Day.
Whatever the fuck that is, but anyway.
As opposed to all the other days.
Which are the shit day, the unhappy days. No, but it made me start thinking what makes you happy.
Georgina, do you get asked by prospective clients, do you know celebrities? Could you ask someone like...
yourself, your good self.
George. could you ask George Clooney's manager? Would
I
he
actually
be able to
know
turn?
George Clooney's assistant? She's an Aussie. Not joking.
I don't know why I said George Clooney.
that was just out of the hat. She is. So I could contact him.
Have you contacted people on behalf of your clients and said, could you turn up? This is what the deal is. And
I mean,
who are some of those people that you know?
Well, it's easier now than ever, mostly because you used to have to go through management companies.
Yep.
And with social media, you can actually reach. It's pretty easy to reach out now globally to anyone, even if it's their official kind of Insta page, you can direct message.
And is it them who responds?
No, normally it's an assistant or a PA, but it's incredible how quick
they respond.
You can get responses because they know there's big dollars. I have to be careful, obviously, about who I talk about, but big name DJs is a big, because I'm dealing with people that are generally in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and they all want a name DJ for a celebration, for example.
Is that like those, I can't think of, Fitty? What?
Yeah, like Fitty, yeah, Fitty, like that kind of thing.
What's the other?
Diplo.
Yeah, all those folks.
David Guetta, Peggy Goo, who's a really probably the biggest DJ in the world, Korean girl, Korean woman at the moment. Madonna, if you so wanted. Yeah. but they're all pretty easy to access. Everyone's got a fee and you just find out is the fee in the ballpark, and then people weigh up and their overall budget.
So
do I want to spend that much on that person?
Now, Georgina from Dam Fiden Foods, our Australian Grand Prix is coming up this weekend, but I don't know how much you can tell me of this, but you've been asked for a pretty big ask for the Monaco Grand Prix about getting a boat on a trackside. You said, man, oh man, which for this year? They said no. For next year, you said no. They said for this year, you said that's it. 6 weeks, wake up. How can you tell us anything about that request?
Well,
not necessarily who the people are. No, we don't want to know who the people are.
Yeah, I've chipped away at that, and to be honest, it's actually impossible. I can get them a huge boat, but it's too big to actually even get in on the marina.
Yep.
And those marina spots do go a long way in advance. So this year I wasn't
doesn't matter
able to
how
procure
good
that.
You are.
I've got feelers out though and dibs on next year for them. They will go this year, and there will be an event of some description, but it'll be smaller than originally
envisaged. Because when the race goes around, the apartments, so you can actually get them overlooking that as well.
But I think we all know, I mean, to be honest, they're just flying by like blowflies.
Yeah. That's
you
it.
You don't really, I mean, you've got the noise, but apart from that,
you haven't
really,
even got the
watching.
Noise these days.
Yeah, well,
we've got the electric cars, well, mainly.
Not in F1.
Yeah,
F1. But that's a separate race, that EV, isn't it?
No, but I'm just saying the batteries that.
So they microphone them up, don't they?
Yeah. They do. Yeah. Before the – when the real Grand Prix – when the
– the old ear when they shattering.
Absolutely. That was one of the great thrills of going when they started the engines.
Like bass in your chest. Your
bones would shake. This is what we were just talking about. They've stopped the Raptor jet going over now because they say – yeah, because it denotes war. And we're a peace-loving nation. Can you believe it?
It denotes war.
It does, because it's a Raptor, it's a fighting plane.
You know, like, come on.
Fucking, you couldn't believe it. That's why. And the boat you sourced, I think, was the boat you sourced was a big boat that was an Australian boat.
It was actually owned by, funnily enough, I'd started researching, and I've got people that also, you know, I can call upon if I know it's something in the maritime. I know that's a boat dealer.
You know someone who knows someone.
You know, like
someone.
If I need a car, I know the car guy to go to that will say this is who you need to talk to. So I found a boat, and it was €650,000 a day.
A day.
A day. And when I kind of scratched down a bit further, it's owned by a Brisbane family.
Really?
Yeah. So there's a lot of wealth
and
in
we
Australia.
And we would know who they are.
The Maloofs.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, because you told me that.
Yeah, they're not a client of mine, I should preface. I just found out that they owned the boat.
Big boat.
But what amazing, isn't it? You know,
so
you own a boat, Sam, don't you?
Not that big? Not like the Maloofs, no.
But if they want to rent it out like that,
can we get it to Monaco?
Yeah. you could, €693,000, you could have it for €693.
Right.
Just 693
euro. That'd
do. Yeah, that'd be $1,000.
Use it as the tender.
that's they can use it as a latrine.
That's not going.
As latrines, they can use it as a powder room. Now, you would be probably, Georgina, I'm just, while this chat's going on, assessing that you'd probably be one of the best connected entrepreneurs, certainly in Australia, and it would be well known overseas for what you can provide for people, particularly. Do people from the other side of the Antipodes, the other side, do they contact you when they come to Australia and want to know what Australia is about? Because we've never been here, and they'll say, would you like to see what Australia is about? I'll give you the best time you've ever... And you fly them, you get in charge of limousines and planes and you get them out here. And what do you do to them?
Well, I can.
And who's come out here and who's been some of your clients?
I can, but they tend to have, you know, that side of it. Sounding like this is all very posh, I also do like really basic catering as well. So, and a lot of those people, to be honest, they just want a barbecue. You know, like it's not all caviar and lobster. When you, like, reverse, often what that is, it'll be a client that I might have here has a colleague that may be based in London and they'll give my name as saying, if you need someone to help you organise, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not a full concierge service, but as part of the kind of events world, you end up by association, you know, I can book a jet, I can do a limo, you know, but those kind of people, they tend to do that themselves and they have specific companies that manage that side. I tend to take care of them from the kind of food and beverage, even restaurants, helping them book, you know, hard to get in restaurants. Obviously, I've got relationships with lots of restaurants. I've been in the food game for a long time. So basically, I just get around, make friends and try and spread the love.
It'd be fair to say, Georgina, wouldn't it not, that a lot of those people, whether they're here or overseas, want naughty experiences that you provide, and the naughtier,
there's a bit
the more
of a thread going on here,
the
Sue.
More titillating it is for them. Which is, I
some of these people are really boring too, Sam. I've got to say, like, there's much.
Give us some of the exciting ones.
There's just, you know, there's a lot more. There's, you know what? I find Australians actually really know how to have a good time. Like when you're travelling or if you do an event in another country. That country often looks, geez, these Aussies, they really know how to have a great time. Mm-hmm. And it's not just drinking. It's not just about getting blind drunk. They really do. Like, we love to dance and eat and, you know, and enjoy life and really, you know, grab it by the balls and throw yourselves in and be, you know, all encompassed, not just sitting at five-star resorts, sitting around, you know, drinking Aperol spritzes, being wankers. Aussies really get to the bait. You know, like they're the ones that are jumping in the ocean and going on the sailing trips or jungles or safaris or... So, you know, I think that's what people love about what we do here. It's, you know, we're quite adventurous.
Have you had any disasters?
I've had plenty.
Not that you have been responsible for, but people have just overdone things and been bad actors.
I've had a lot of, you know, disasters happen all the time. And in my game, we're doing a lot of stuff that's one-off. So with that comes risk. You know, it's not, we're not going into the building with four walls and a roof. We're building something from the ground up for one night only and then we're pulling it down. You know, what could possibly go wrong? Everything. And so you mitigate risk and you also, my job really is, I'm always looking, assuming something will go wrong and just making sure I've got the right things in play to deal with it so that if that happens, I can, you know, smoke and mirrors. It's like something's going on behind the scenes but no one would know. I did recently had a wedding marquee for like 350 people that burnt to the ground while everybody was out the front having pre-dinner drinks. And that was interesting.
Was that here?
It was. It was in.
Did we know about that?
No. It actually kind of made the news, but the family's name didn't. But it was an electrical issue.
Yep.
And it was a very hot day too, a light blew. And it just, the marquee caught on fire. I was in the marquee at the time with a couple of bartenders just doing the last check of everything.
Oh, no.
It had taken days to set this event up. And the whole thing, I turned, one of my staff went to grab a bucket of water and I was like, mate, just get out. Let's just run. And it literally burnt to the ground in minutes and the entire wedding was watching it. Fire trucks and you know what, but hats off to the family. They came up to me and they said, can we continue with something? We lost everything, all the alcohol. Lucky the food was in another section. I've handed out credit cards to all my staff and sent them off to every Dan Murphy's. Like we had nothing. I called Rick Jamison, who owns Harry the Hire. Yep. He was amazing. He opened up after hours. He said, what do you need? I said, we need everything. Plates, knives, forks, chairs, glasses. We got nothing.
Really?
And they were great. They came out. They came to the parties, you know, so to speak. And we just set up trestle tables and got the bar going. I kept the band playing. And they partied till 4 in the morning.
Fantastic.
And had a great story to tell.
So I said when we started this that I wasn't sure if I'd met you, but I found out I know of you because...
Oh, do you? Oh, I know how.
Because I on 3AW,
that's
which
right.
has the longest running breakfast program hosted by Ross Stevenson, who is just a friend of mine, but just not just a friend of mine, not name dropping. but I remember many years ago I used to listen to the show, the morning show, the breakfast show, and he used to have on every week a personality called Honey Galore.
That was me.
And I remember speaking to you at this function and I that we were at the other week, and I said, I used to be Honey Galore. I said, you're Honey Galore. Christ, I said, I used to listen. I never knew. How did you? Now, was that with Ross and John, or was it Ross and Dean?
No,
that
Ross wasn't and John.
John?
It was Ross and John.
Okay,
yeah.
Ross, John.
John Burns.
John Burns, yeah. And Ross Stevenson. So you did that for how long?
7 years.
7 years. Yeah. How did you get the gig of being Honey Galore? How did they know about...
Interesting question, actually.
How did they know about you?
Well, John Burns used to do the gig before I did. He was called Sir Lunchalot.
He was too.
Remember?
He was indeed.
Yeah.
Very good name, that.
It was great. Now, I'll tell you a bit about how I got my name in a minute. But I was doing a little bit of just moonlighting kind of some TV gigs with Wes Crooks. Do you know Wes?
No.
I do.
Yeah, you know Wes? Yeah, mm-hmm. WTFN.
WTFN, yeah.
Yeah, and he was a producer. Anyway, and he said, you know what, you've got a great voice for radio. And I was like, and not a good face for TV? Is that what you're inferring?
Backhand compliment.
Anyway, so he put me together. He said, you should come into the, just come in one day after the show and we'll sit you down in the office and have a chat to the boys.
At AW?
Yep. When it was in South Melbourne, you know, back then. And so I went in and I met them and we just had a chat and we kind of got on really well, and Ross said, why don't you come in next week and we'll do it, go and review a restaurant and bring it in and we'll see how you go. And he
so had John decided not to do it anymore, yeah, or John did you snip him?
No, he was already a presenter, and yes. I think they were just doing a rolling kind of thing where, and they were trying to get someone to be a bit more regular, so they were testing out people at that point. And they said, you know, we'd like, after I'd kind of done that and passed the test, they said, we'd like you to come on board. And they said, no, we need to get a name for you. And so these were my choices. I could be, they suggested I could be Phyllis Mignon, Lazy Susan, or Honey Galore. So needless to say, I chose Honey Galore.
From Pussy Galore,
exactly.
Presume,
well, that's what
the
they used to call my sister when she occasionally came on air and joined me. So, yeah, and so that started out a beautiful relationship. I love Ross and John Burns too. Yep. They're great men, very generous, and they, you know, spend a lot of time helping me kind of work out radio, and they're easy to talk to, and really, I mean, Ross is one of the smartest guys I know, really.
Smartest.
Did you used to go on your own?
Yeah. So I'd have to go every Friday morning. It was a bit of a trap, Sue, because it got to every Thursday night and I'd be like, shit, I haven't done a restaurant.
What time are you on? I can't
8 a.m. I had the last segment of the week, so it was 8:15 to 8:30, and I tell you, there was a few mornings where I'd sound like this because I had maybe didn't come home early enough, and my mum would be like, you sound like a drag queen this morning, Georgina. and I maybe did a few all-nighters as well on my way. But the boys were great and they really encouraged me. It was interesting. It's quite a powerful position, food reviewing, if you have an audience. Obviously their audience was their audience, but you know, a lot of people listen to 3AW.
Huge,
and
huge.
I worked out very early on that it really wasn't my place to criticise, you know, like I'm not there to ruin someone's livelihood.
Yeah, just
who am I to say that your place is, you know, crap and this place isn't? And so there were quite a few spots I went to that were terrible and I just, you know, just didn't do them because it's like that's still somebody's bread and butter.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, who do we think we are?
No, that's,
you know?
No. Okay.
Half the time we're not invited in. We're just going in, you know, unknown.
And so just from memory, you used to speak about, and you used to then try and add a bit of intrigue and just some stories, just rather than speaking blandly about, oh, yes, we had the filet mignon.
Yeah,
that was nice.
I'd try and I often
just
would.
Just titillate it up a bit.
Yeah, I would. And I'd also try to find places that were not obvious. And Ross was a big believer in that. Like, he's like, don't just do the top bloody 50 restaurants that every wanker goes to. We don't want to know about that. So I did the Titanic Theatre restaurant. I did the tram car restaurant. I reviewed IKEA once. I went out to the Dan. You know, I went to crazy places. I went on boats. I did. And I would find, like, hole-in-the-wall kind of, like, a $2 pizza shop in Spotswood, yep. and a guy that made sausages. I would do like the cheapest buffets. I'd try and find the cheapest buffet in Melbourne, and you know, because not everyone's wealthy and everyone eats and people love going out. So, you know, I'd do golf clubs and bowling clubs. They've got a lot of great restaurants in bowling clubs.
Yeah.
Actually, surprisingly.
Did you used to have to pay for it?
No, they would pay for the cost of the meal, yeah. I mean, sometimes I'd try and squeeze a bit extra in and a few extra friends. I went to African restaurants where I remember I took my sister in Footscray and she's like, put her hand up to the guy and said, there's no cutlery. And he's like, no, you eat with your hands. And she was like, are you kidding me?
Authentic at least.
Yeah, it's a type of African bread. It's a really spongy bread. Yeah. I think it's Doha or Doja or something like that. And basically that's put on the table, like a huge double-sized pizza. It's kind of fluffy, bit like a crumpet. But, yep. And they come and they just tip the curry and the rice and the accompaniments upside
down. Oh, they do it for you and then you eat it.
Well, no, they tip that down. That's how it's served. And then you just pull off the bread and scoop it up and eat it.
All in together.
Yeah, there's a new restaurant just opening Greville Street, actually, that I think it opens this week. It's a Sri Lankan one. Hopper. Do you know what hoppers are?
No.
They're a Sri Lankan. They're kind
of
like
grasshoppers.
They could serve them.
Yeah, they could.
They're like a papadum, but they're doughy. And it's a very Sri Lankan kind of, it's similar. And in the middle of the restaurant, there's this really cool big hand washing station. You wash your hands and then you sit down and it's the same thing, you eat with your hands. Give it
now,
a go.
I have a little experience.
I mean, you know where your hands have been, so you might not be into it.
I have a little experience with how mingy 3AW are, because I used to go in, get asked to go into the midnight thing and do various things. Not one ever. Not even a threepence. Don't tell me you didn't get a stipend for doing this.
I got paid.
Yeah, that's all right.
Don't worry about that. Yeah, no, I got paid. It wasn't a huge amount.
No,
and to
but
be honest,
you got
the time it would take to research and, you know, it sounds fun, but every week you're having to come up with something different.
I know.
It was quite time consuming. Yeah. My friends loved it because every Thursday night one of them got a free meal. And I made some great friendships with some really amazing, restaurateurs that were way out in the boondocks that I took the time to afterward. I would never say where I was from and I would never kind of come in all guns blazing, but I would always often ask their story, like, how did you end up with this restaurant? And, you know, what's a guy like you doing in, you know, out in Pakenham with a, I don't know, Sri Lankan buffet? You know, how does that happen? Good
it's
stories.
Pretty expensive to eat out now.
It's
properly,
ridiculous.
Isn't it?
And, it
and
is really
that's to do
getting
with,
nuts.
The overheads and the wages and the salaries and the bloody it's, rent. And the
it's just fucking snowballing. And, I mean, the bubble has to burst. And I think the concept of getting a cheap, honest meal is just getting harder and harder to find.
And this would be a great fillip for your business, I assume. People say, well, we're not going out. We'll
stay home.
Get
Georgina
to
Not that much cheaper. But what I do is allow people to be private, to be able to be individual and unique, you know. Yeah. And like we met the other week, you know, you must have a great time going to parties, just sourcing people to chat
to. Not at all. That's I very rarely go out at all.
Well, that was a great party.
It was.
And you know what?
And then the cuisine. And
I did do the catering, of course.
It was fantastic.
Thank you,
Sam.
That was a Peking duck, wasn't it?
Oh, there was prawn cocktails,
no,
I know.
Prawn cocktails. Yeah, that was good.
And it was a very generous host. But you know what's great, Sue? And I think this is what I would love to see come back, and it doesn't mean you have to be rich and bring a caterer in, but dinner parties, they just disappeared. I mean, I remember growing up, my parents, it was every weekend, there was a dinner party, right? And my mum would dress us up to be the bloody waitresses and she'd just stick chopsticks in our head and do Chinese banquets, probably a bit wrong now. But anyway, at the time we thought it was hilarious and we put our, you know, Chinese pyjamas on and she did the Elizabeth Chong cooking class or something. But, you know, the art of a dinner party. And I remember it's a very Melbourne thing because I moved to Sydney for a while, which is why I left 3AW when I did. I moved. And no one would invite you around to their house. Now,
a girlfriend of mine did exactly the same. She entertained so much here in Melbourne, then lived in Sydney.
Yep, nothing. And donuts.
Yep, donuts. They all go out to a restaurant.
Yep,
so it's like,
exactly.
don't dirty my home
exactly.
or don't do anything.
Well, not intimate, not private, not letting you in.
Yep.
But I would love, Sam, I would love to see more people doing dinners. There's something really nice about being invited into someone's home And
but no one can cook anymore.
You don't need to cook. Mm. Honestly, there's so much great pre-made food. I could write a book on how to actually do that without cooking. It's easy.
I was just going to ask you, what fare or cuisine is the most popular and the easiest to prepare without having to
slave
over the oven? And
first of all, something that you can pre-cook and then you're just reheating. So whether it be a chicken pie, a lasagna, something that's pre-baked, cannelloni, you know, it doesn't have to be. Here's the thing about dinners. You don't need to impress people. Just opening up your home is it impressive enough? And mixing people, because that was the art of the dinner party, was you don't have 10 people that know each other. You go, okay, I'm going to have that couple and then I'll have that random. Maybe that's, say, I'll bring Sam Newman in. He's a bit of fun. Who'd he get on well with? Or who wouldn't he get on well with? And we could make that a bit fiery. And then really the cuisine, the bit, I think it's always nice to set a nice table. That's easy. Yep. You can do that the day before. You know, you don't have to slave over it. Takeaway. I can't tell you how many dinners I've literally done where I've gone to the Indian restaurant and I've ordered Indian takeaway and I've just ordered three of that curry and three of that and three rice and papadam and maybe I've made the writer myself and a bit of chutney and you lay it all out and everyone serves themselves. And
raw fish.
Raw fish. Ooh. Nice. Just, yeah.
Really, are you a wine connoisseur? Do you or do you have
I like a drop here and there. I'm not a connoisseur, but I know.
Do you have the context? If the people want the bee's knees, you say, well, I'll provide that for you.
That's getting easier and easier. Well, actually, it's funny because there's a real shortage on the high-end. Tequila is one. Now, a lot of my clients all want, I don't know if you know Clas Azul, that's that white bottle with the blue print, the tequila bottle. Yep. It's about $450 a bottle.
Really?
It's actually the lid of it, when you hit it, it's a bell. And the tradition is if you ding the bell, you get a shot. Anyway, it's amazing tequila. And I'm not like a snob, but the difference between that crap tequila with the red cap that you used to drink in your tequila sunrises and this tequila is world's good tequila is a treat and a joy to drink.
Is it?
Yep.
It's from Mexico, isn't it?
Yep. It's a traditional Mexican. It's made out of cactus or agave. And there's Don Julio 1942 is the next most expensive
tequila. Wasn't it a tequila that had a scorpion in it?
Well, I think that's a bit like
stuck in the
they can have that and they can have the actual some kind of cactus flower that's meant to be an aphrodisiac or a, I don't know, meant to hallucinate on it or some the worm. It was
worm,
a worm.
Was it? Yeah, it was a worm. Thought it was a scorpion.
Maybe you had a different guy. But you can't, it's like there's a world shortage on these ridiculously overpriced, you know, kind of specialty. So there's people like the best of things, or they like to think they're drinking the best of things. I don't know. I think in Australia we have such great wine. You don't need to be spending a fortune on wine to get a good drop. What about yourself, Sam? You a wine snob? You don't drink, actually,
I don't drink,
do you?
No,
it's been a while since you had a drink, hasn't it?
Yeah, 15, 16 years. Yeah. But not for health reasons, just for the driving side of it. I think I lost my license for drink driving. And
that was
thought I couldn't be bothered anymore. So I only do it as a disciplinary thing.
Are you doing well? Do you drink it also?
Yeah, I do.
Drinker? Yeah, I'm a drinker too. It's funny.
In moderation.
In my world, she says with a wink across the desk there. In my game, there's a lot more people that are wanting non-alcoholic. And you know, it's like when vegetarians and vegans popped up, we were like, ugh, kill me now. But the reality is there's a big movement for
that. There's so much more sugar though in the non-alcoholic ones.
So much sugar. It is. It's interesting you say that. But there's also some really great botanical kind of spirits that are similar to, say, a gin without the alcohol content that people love, you know, and people that drink love it. So we're doing a lot more of that.
And where would you go? Not the restaurant, but what is your choice of cuisine? What are you?
I love Italian. You know, good simple Italian. Not fussy, not over the top. Just good produce done really simply. Like just great cheese, perfect tomatoes, olive oil, salt, bang. You know, good pasta. I love Japanese too.
Japanese. Wow.
Do you like Japanese?
Love it. Yep.
Do you fish? You fishermen?
No, I don't fish.
You got a boat, but no fish.
Yep, no fish. Jeez. No. I hesitate to say this, talking about boats, but One day, I'd love you to come out on the boat.
I would love to. You heard it, Sue?
You can bring anyone you love.
I'll do the catering. How about that?
Bring some people out in it.
He cooks a Peking duck.
Do you? Yes. Do you do the duck from scratch?
No.
But that doesn't. But that's love the
duck.
Point.
Oh, I love a duck.
Yep. But I mean, even dinner parties at home, you can go down to Victoria Street. They'll cut up a whole duck. They'll give you the pancakes. Yep. You know, what? Lay that out. Well, people can roll their own Peking duck. Beautiful.
Well, you are a star, Georgina. I've been fascinating speaking to you. I'm sure I could have asked you a whole lot of other things about what you do, but. Well, I know what you do, but you couldn't mention them because then you'd have to mention names and what else you do. And
I think we gave a fairly good indication.
We gave it a very good indication that the damn fine foods.
We actually might need your services next year.
Okay.
He's got a big party next
year. A big one.
Big one.
Sam.
I have nothing.
Well, you know who to call. Obviously. Yes. I'm sure we could find something interesting for you, Sam strippers. Newman. I found these strippers once that actually came in naked and put their clothes on and then left.
Reverse strippers. I was in Hong Kong and I did that. They were naked on stage and they left the stage.
Yeah, these girls came dressed. In completely naked. Yep. Everyone was absolutely shocked and then they proceeded to very elegantly put their underwear on, clothes, boots, jackets and walked out.
Yep.
A friend of mine who got married on the weekend, when was that? I drove them in my car because I have a big old Cadillac and I provided the car. And they were the groom's mother was telling me that they went to a restaurant and then a man gave them headphones.
Yeah.
He does walking disco. A walk.
Yeah.
And
through
they
Melbourne.
Walked from...
Silent disco. It's fantastic.
They walked. They had no idea.
What a great treat.
All asked to put on the headphones. And they walked from a little Collins Street, where the restaurant was, up to Spring Street, dancing through the street. People had no idea. This is on Friday. Had no idea what was going
on. I've done it. It's absolutely brilliant.
And he told them choreographed them as he spoke to them through the headphones. I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah, you sometimes see them in Richmond. There's a lot of hen's days around those, those bottomless brunch bars that are prevalent in Richmond.
Often at the Vic Market.
Oh, do they?
They do that as well.
That's
night
a real Melbourne. It's a fun thing to do. Maybe we'll get them on board, Sam, eh? Naked. No, how about some naked silent disco? How about that?
What a treat.
Now, Georgina, thank you so much for coming in. You're a star, an absolute star, and I know that. If Grant Nickel says you're a star, you're a star.
Well, I'll take
he's
that.
A star.
Thank you, Sam. Yeah. It's lovely chatting to you.
Georgina Dam from Dam Fine Foods, thank you so much.
Because you